With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The Environmental Protection Agency proposing to add back renewable fuel gallons waived under SRE, small refinery exemptions, for the years 2023 through 2025 into future renewable fuel standard obligations. It's drawing support from the Renewable Fuels Association. EPA laying out two options. One, fully reallocate all exempted volumes to the 26-27 standards or reallocate half. RFA President CEO Jeff Cooper said the group favors full reallocation to maintain intended levels of renewable fuel consumption. Now, the proposal published in the Federal Register and a 45-day public comment window will open. Now, for ag, restoring waived gallons would help preserve demand for corn ethanol and soy-based biodiesel, renewable diesel, particularly after a year of uncertainty around those SREs. October rail freight costs for grain have dropped to their lowest level in 6 years as sluggish soybean export demand weighs on the market. For the week ending September 4th, USDA's Ag Marketing Service reporting BNSF shuttle values averaging $406 per car and Union Pacific shuttles at $250. Both are more than $800 below their 5-year averages for the same week. Analysts say improved service on the major railroads has also added to capacity, further reducing secondary market prices. Other transport indicators show similar softness. Barge grain movements on the Mississippi totaling 361,000 tons, down 6% from the previous week, 9% lower than last year. Gulf export loadings, 26 vessels, 8% above the same period last year, though forward bookings suggest fewer ships ahead. And in the meantime, diesel fuel prices climbing for the second week in a row, $3.77 per gallon. Make America Healthy Again movement, reshaping food policy in ways that bring both risk and opportunities for U.S. ag. That's according to new analysis from Ag America Lending, originating during RFK Jr.'s 2023 campaign and formalized with the MAHA Commission in 2025. The movement emphasizes nutrition over pharmaceuticals in addressing chronic disease with ripple effects reaching farms and agribusiness. Already the influence surfacing in consumer demand for food free of seed oils, artificial dyes, and high fructose corn syrup. Produce market seeing a wide mix of price movement for the week. That's according to U.S. Foods. Leaf lettuce, iceberg, strawberries, limes, pineapple, avocados, honeydews all trending lower. By contrast, celery, cauliflower, broccoli, green onions, lemons, oranges, green beans, jalapenos, Roma tomatoes, cantaloupes, and several apple varieties moving higher on steady to good demand. Potatoes remain mostly steady, though russets out of Idaho and reds out of Minnesota softening. Onions mixed with Washington and Oregon supplies holding firm. Idaho lots edging lower. Cabbage from New York, green beans from the Northeast showing stronger markets, and in fruit, California citrus is climbing. It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You are right in the heat of the season. With field maintenance, planting, fertilizing, and spraying, you don't have time for equipment breakdowns. Let Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, be your partner in keeping your equipment running at peak performance. Our factory-trained technicians support you with in-field service and genuine Case IH parts. Wiley has 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This is Agriculture Today.
We've had some beautiful weather this fall so far.
Oklahoma State beef cattle specialist Paul Beck.
Talked to a lot of producers that are already starting to wean their calves, and I just felt it was is time to bring up some points that we need to consider in getting prepared for weaning. We need to be sure we have all of our vaccines, dewormers, pharmaceuticals ready to go and in place. There's nothing that really slows down the process more than having to, you know, go to town and get more pharmaceuticals. But before that, we really need to work on getting our calves ready to wean. If we have a set of facilities that we normally wean in, you know, it's best to get the calves familiar with those facilities before we wean. We can bring them in and feed the cows with the calves in there for a few days leading up to weaning, and just make them used to coming in so that it's not a big struggle to get those calves caught, and then they know where they're at. Try to keep everything the same. Make it just a normal day until you get that gate caught, gate shut and the cattle caught. You know, if we are practicing good cattle handling practices, we're quiet, we're slow, and the cattle are calm and we are calm. Whenever we start getting excited, the cattle start getting excited, and that's when we start losing a lot of body weight through that weaning process. We need to have clean water. Cattle dry matter intake is related to water intake. So if we have limited water intake, they will limit their feed intake. We need to have highly palatable, dust-free, fresh hay available for these calves. So it's something that they're familiar with while they're weaning. They've been exposed to it while they're with the cow, or it's similar to the grass that they've been consuming. A high-quality receiving feed that's formulated and supplemented to include all the minerals and vitamins that they would need during the weaning process is also important. It's got to be dust-free. It's got to be palatable. So those calves will eat it and will have all the nutrients they need through the weaning process. We're pushing the immune system through vaccination along at a time when they're stressed from separation from the cow. So we need to have extra protein and extra energy in these rations so that they will have the immune system to respond to the vaccines we're giving. Another thing to consider would be using some lower stress weaning techniques like fence line weaning, where we have a well-fenced grass trap. We can bring the cows and the calves into it for a day or so before weaning, separate the cows and calves, leave the cows in that trap, and then bring the cows out into a pasture next to them. The fences have to be good. A good hot wire along with a solid barbed wire fence actually is sufficient for this. That allows the cows and calves to have fence line contact, nose-to-nose contact. It decreases the amount of bawling and walking fences that the calves will do. Very low stress on that calf to do it that way. About a week of nose-to-nose contact, and then you can move that calf to another facility. Weaning is a stressful time, and the more we can do to reduce the stress and to get these calves prepared for weaning and being prepared ourselves, the cattle are calm and we are calm.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
As we've heard from a lot of witnesses, reforming NEPA will provide certainty for all projects and for all sectors of the economy.
Chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee, Arkansas Representative Bruce Westerman.
In fact, the minority witness at our July hearing stated, and I quote, "Any NEPA reform shouldn't pick winners or losers," end quote. Fairness requires that the permitting process proceed in a way that is blind to a project. By ensuring this, we will allow the free market to make decisions. I ask you, two engineers who testified in July, if the NEPA process can be streamlined without sacrificing environmental quality. They both said unequivocally that we can, and I fully agree. Amending the underlying statutes to provide predictability to the regulated community and our federal agencies will strengthen the economy, improve the environment, and save agency resources. We have three bipartisan bills before us today that would address these issues in different ways. First off, we have H.R. 573, introduced by Representative Yacom from Indiana, which would create common sense reporting requirements for the Council of Environmental Quality, or CEQ. As part of a thorough review of previous NEPA practices, the first Trump administration analyzed 656 environmental impact statements, or EISs, published between 2013 and 2018. The review found that on average, an EIS was 575 pages long and took 4.5 years to complete, with a quarter of them taking over 6 years to complete. According to a study from the Breakthrough Institute, NEPA-related litigation on EISs takes an average of 4.2 years to resolve, and environmental non-governmental organizations, or NGOs, were involved in 75% of NEPA claims. H.R. 573 would coalesce prior data collection and reporting efforts into a single report published annually by CEQ on NEPA litigation, timelines, and page length. Reinstating these reports will help identify NEPA bottlenecks. Next, we have H.R. 4503, the E-Permit Act, introduced by Representatives Johnson of South Dakota and Peters of California. Today's technology landscape for federal permitting consists of diverse and isolated systems spread across different federal agencies. Generally, these systems are not interoperable or sufficiently accessible for project sponsors and the general public. To address these issues, the Trump administration issued a memorandum titled Updating Permitting Technology for the 21st Century, and CEQ then issued a Permitting Technology Action Plan, which sets the foundation for seamless information exchange between agencies, simplified interactions for applicants, and greater transparency and predictability on environmental review and permitting schedules for project sponsors and stakeholders. The E-Permit Act codifies key aspects of CEQ's action plan and directs federal agencies on how to implement electronic permitting systems. It also instructs CEQ to work with other agencies to establish a unified interagency data system for environmental permitting and to integrate AI into agencies' permitting processes. Also on today's agenda is H.R. 4776, the SPEED Act, which I look forward to discussing in greater depth later in this hearing. For now, I'll simply say this. Over the years, we have passed different pieces of legislation that usually include funding for different projects and purposes, which are then celebrated and lauded in D.C. But what always happens afterwards? The projects themselves can't be permitted because Congress has shied away from addressing permitting reform head on. We have said this several times in this committee, but our broken permitting system isn't just holding back our economy, it's threatening our national security and that of our allies. The cost of inaction are too high, so the time to advance bipartisan permitting reform is now.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever. Because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Applications are now open for the Emergency Livestock Relief Program for flood and wildfire, which is meant to help farmers and ranchers cover part of extra feed costs associated with these types of natural disasters. American Farm Bureau economist Danny Munch says the application for this relief differs from a previous USDA program.
Unlike the drought version that was announced earlier this year and paid automatically off of livestock forage program payments, this one requires a direct application from farmers to FSA. Payments are going to be based off of USDA standard monthly feed costs, and that'll be 60% of 3 months of feed for flooding or 60% of 1 month of feed for wildfires.
Munch says about $940 million is available for the program.
This is the remaining balance back from Congress's $2 billion livestock directive from the American Relief Act of 2025. If estimated demand that USDA receives exceeds available funds, USDA is going to apply a national payment factor at the end of the calculations. So those final payments might be lower than the base calculation. There are payment limits of $125,000 per program year or $250,000 if more than 75% of your adjusted gross income is from farming.
If farmers or ranchers think they're eligible, Munch says they should reach out to their local FSA office to learn more by October 31st of this year.
This is a little different than a lot of the previous programs that have automatically sent applications. You have to file this one to FSA. Applicants must provide livestock inventory as of the disaster date. And if your county is not a pre-approved list, photos, insurance, or local declarations that prove you faced that disaster. There's also more information from your local FSA office or farmers.gov to provide a little bit more information. Payments are expected to go out sometime in early 2026 once USDA can estimate demand and pick a final proration amount for those calculations.
The Make America Healthy Commission released its Make Our Children Healthy Again strategy with more than 120 initiatives addressing childhood health. Brian Glenn, American Farm Bureau Federation Director of Government Affairs, was encouraged that the commission listened to American farmers.
The report includes a renewed focus on American-grown fresh fruits, vegetables, and meat. And it includes reintroducing whole milk into the school meal programs, all of which can help provide a foundation for a lifetime of smart choices. The report highlights efforts to prioritize voluntary conservation efforts for farmers and ranchers. And the report includes recommendations to optimize EPA's already robust pesticide regulatory process, which will help accelerate innovation.
Glenn says the report is simply one step in a long process for the MAHA Commission and for America's farmers and ranchers.
The report includes policy recommendations for several different government agencies to carry out. So it is very important for farmers and ranchers to continue to have a seat at the table to ensure this is done in a transparent process that includes input from agriculture.
Glenn says it's very important that farmers and ranchers continue to fully engage with policymakers to tell the story of how agriculture helps make America healthy.
Our food system has evolved and innovated over time to provide healthy and nutritious food to meet the diverse needs and preferences of American families. And we look forward to further innovations to improve health outcomes in America while ensuring farmers and ranchers can stock America's pantries.
Mike Davis, Washington.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton, to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is Agriculture Today.
You know, if we focus on the positive for a moment, it's the first crop for many of us that we've really been able to cut for the last several years. So we are grateful for that and the timely rains. But like you said, then what do we do with it?
Amy France is a Kansas sorghum grower and chair of the National Sorghum Producers.
We aren't seeing prices reflecting what we've got into the crop, and we know firsthand that there isn't anything moving. And, you know, elephant in the room is China exports are down 97%. So we are facing serious challenges that could lead to a crisis. And right now we're saying we need 200 million bushel to move in the next 150 days. So we've got a big challenge up ahead, and we've got to get some bushels moving.
What has the industry been doing?
National sorghum producers have been pounding the pavement in D.C. and having lots of conversations. I know we were discussing earlier, I think at minimum, we've been there at least once a month since the beginning of the year. And, you know, utilizing those relationships we've been building and forming new ones, doing some educating. And we've been warning them for a little over a year now that this day could come. And so we do have to say, okay, what's next? And obviously, again, the big one is restoring trade with China. That's the single largest outlet for sorghum and could absorb that entire U.S. crop. So no secret, no question, that's the big one. Expanding food aid. So historically, it's moved about 12 to 20 million bushels. And so we need to see that moving again. And one thing, this isn't new. This isn't something we're just pursuing. We've been working diligently on accessing other markets and building those relationships. And so, you know, Mexico, we've got to focus on them as well. Vietnam, India, we've got lots of potential there. And so we can't lose sight of what we have to have immediately, and that is China. But as we continue to move forward, what else is working, and what can we utilize to kind of ease some of that pain?
There have been some recent tax breaks domestically, and biofuels remain important.
We're very grateful for that domestic and the American-produced biofuel. But these things have to work in tandem with the strong trade agreements. So that's what's difficult, is making sure we're not just single-focused on one thing and forget the other. We really need to move forward. You know, E15, year-round E15 is great, and oftentimes we have to educate individuals at ethanol plants that, yes, sorghum works like corn does, and so that's great, and we want to see that investment in American-produced biofuels, but as well as those strong trade agreements.
But what can farmers be doing right now?
Coming off of August recess, and I know that we encourage the lots to get out there and visit with their leaders and their congressmen. And we know from calls we've heard back from D.C. that a lot of people did do that, and we greatly appreciate that. And what I would say is getting involved in your state and national associations. There is power in numbers, and we have got momentum at this point and continue to work on building that momentum. But one thing I know, when I go to D.C., if I have member stories, that makes my message even stronger, because they do want to hear from how it's affecting the farmer themselves. And, you know, all of us on the board are farmers, but to be able to say, my friend in South Texas, this is what they're experiencing, that really does bring a strong message to D.C. So I would encourage to have those conversations, reach out to us, let us know how we can help, and, you know, let us work on your behalf. That's what we're here for, and that's what we've been doing.
It's Agriculture Today.
You are right in the heat of the season. With field maintenance, planting, fertilizing, and spraying, you don't have time for equipment breakdowns. Let Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, be your partner in keeping your equipment running at peak performance. Our factory-trained technicians support you with in-field service and genuine Case IH parts. Wiley has 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I'm in Levis, Quebec, Canada, which is right across the St. Lawrence River from Quebec City.
Oklahoma State livestock economist Dr. Daryl Peel.
The timing of this trip was because this is when the Canadian Cattlemen's Association are having their semi-annual meeting. And so I'm here to do, to be here. I've been serving as a mentor for the last year for one of the members of their young leadership program. And so they're graduating and I wanted to be here for that. So I get a chance to visit that for a couple of days as a part of this trip. Canada, for the most part, has struggled much like the U.S. the last few years with a lot of drought, and their cattle numbers have been declining again, much like the U.S. Just recently, the Canadian Statistical Agency issued new reports for July 1 that showed for the first time since, I think, 2021, their cattle herd grew a little bit this last year in Canada. Canada has about 11.9 million head of cattle total in their industry. And that was up about 0.8%. The beef cow herd was up about 0.4%, and their beef replacement heifers were up 2% on a year-over-year basis. So it looks like they've started some retention and some herd rebuilding that we have not seen yet in the U.S. We have a very integrated relationship with Canada as far as cattle and beef both. Canada, we do a lot of bilateral trade of beef with Canada. So we both import. Canada is the number three source of beef imports into the U.S. So far this year, those imports are down about 3.5%. Our imports from most countries are up, and you know our total imports through July were up about 30% on a year-over-year basis. But with Canada, they were down slightly, 3.5% lower on a year-over-year basis. As far as exports, our exports to Canada are down 12.7% so far this year. Canada is the number five export market for the U.S. And people might ask, you know, why do we both import and export from Canada? Because, in fact, the quality of the products in general are pretty similar. And a lot of it just has to do with the fact that, you know, the U.S. and Canada share a very wide east-west border. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at where cattle production and beef production happens in Canada, it's closer to the western part of the U.S. If you look at where most of the people in Canada are, they're close to the eastern, you know, the Corn Belt and so on in the U.S. So a lot of products flow north and south. It's much more transportation efficient than shipping them east and west in both countries. And so it's really transportation logistics that drive a lot of the trade between the U.S. and Canada as far as beef. So we do have that live cattle trade relationship as well.
We turn from cattle to the nation's waterways. Kansas State grain economist Dan O'Brien.
Signals out of from the Mississippi River system that we have draft and tow sizes being restricted for barges going down the lower Mississippi. And of course, right now is the time when as we have a lot of grain coming into Kansas elevators, we'd be looking to be able to move that either by rail or through the Port of Catoosa anyway, by barge on down the system. So anything that slows up transit or limits the quantity that we can move is working against us in terms of cash prices and costs and all of that. So anyway, that's a concern. It seems in a lot of these months, you head into the fall. So I guess maybe one way to bring that together would be that for the most part, when things are dry, during the fall, it helps us on harvest. But when things are really dry in the Mississippi River system at the same time, then that hurts us in terms of being able to move that same grain down the river. So it's kind of a six of one, half a dozen of the other transition.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
When you raise dryland cotton, one of the only things you control is input costs. Reduce your seed costs by as much as 75% without sacrificing yield potential with BSD 9X cotton from Brownfield Seed and Delining. Perfectly adapted for dryland acres, BSD 9X is large seed and has excellent early season vigor and consistently yields at the top in university trials. Find out about BSD 9X by calling 806-637-6282 or visit brownfieldseed.com.